know with the representative delegation, and so that there must be at least one, so that if there's more than one party to the delegation, then if the Alaska vote splits, it still has to have at least one vote or from each state. That's the idea, is to allow for protection of state interests, but not jeopardize the hamstring situation that people were referring to. Also, you have to realize is that I think what most people are concerned with are the experiences that we have encountered with resource allocation councils and compacts. This compact specifically avoids resource allocation and resource consumption issues. The sole purpose is resource protection. And I think that what we found in the negotiations between California, Oregon, Washington, Hawaii, and Alaska was that there was almost near unanimity that there is no resource to allocate if we first do not have protection. And it's interesting to me that that there's the reference that other states are not interested in the subsistence issue by both treaty and for example, the most important issue to Hawaii was the protection of the resource for the consumption by subsistence of marine resources for indigenous Hawaiians. That was their number one reason that they brought to negotiations for wanting to enter into the compact. The second one is by treaty rights. Many indigenous Americans in the Pacific Northwest, Washington, Oregon, and California, for example, shared the desire for their consumptive rights of marine resources by treaty to enter into this compact. So it's a little bit of a dangerous issue to try to separate Alaska from others' interests by pointing out the subsistence issue, because in part, that was the driving force. And so what I found was that throughout the negotiating process, the desire to protect resources was a unifying factor, especially since this compact in no way deals with the allocation or consumption of resources. Therefore, that hamstring I just didn't see anywhere in the negotiation process.
Thank you, Harry. Are there other questions by members of the committee? Representative Finkelstein?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm real interested in, you know, how compact like this, which is sort of conceptual at this point, how is it going to affect your company specifically? Because I think the comments you're making are more sort of whether something's good public policy for the state. One of the arguments you're making is we could end up weakening our standards if we've got to go and make compromises with these other states, which may have lower bond amounts, which may have different protection for subsistence, that sort of thing. Well, that theoretically would save you money if we've got some lower standards. Whereas the other argument against it was $500,000 a lot of money. Well, we're spending tens of millions of dollars already trying to prevent oil spills. And I suppose that's a little bit additional cost to you there. I'm just interested in, apart from all those sort of broad public policy arguments, how do you think this is going to affect your company, and why do you oppose it based on that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Finkelstein, we have been in the process of commenting on these laws as they were developed, commenting on these regulations as they're being developed, and now we're in the process of complying with these laws and regulations. We have already filed our contingency plans with the state of Alaska, with the state of California. The contingency plan regulations were just developed in the state of Washington, coming out in Oregon next month, I believe. So we have incurred great expense, spent lots of time complying with the various state laws, and now those would all just be set aside as the compact develops what its new regime is. Consistency, yes, consistency is nice, but consistency merely for the sake of consistency isn't always good. I can see a scenario where we pick the most stringent from everybody, and perhaps it's not applicable in every state. In California, where there's lots of spill response contractors, it's not as important to have stringent response times in that as it is here in Alaska, where there isn't. So some things which are applicable in some states really don't need to be with other states, yet they would be applied across the board. It would entail further headaches for the shippers, further expense for the shippers, and as we've seen, you know, expenses shouldn't be encouraged to be going up. And we should try to rein in expense at all times to keep things economic. And consistency for the pure sake of consistency isn't always good.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Finkelstein.
First of all, I don't think that's the case. I don't think that there's any reason to think that the compact can't have different response times for different areas. I mean, of course you're going to have different response times for some areas based on what's realistic and the resource you're trying to protect. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've heard any testimony indicate that a compact inherently is going to have consistent response times necessarily. It may be a consistent approach, but they're going to decide that some public beach in Long Beach might have, a higher level and a quicker response time than, some other area. Who knows? But do you have any information to indicate that would be precluded by a compact?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Finkelstein, my read of the proposed legislation is that the contingency plans would be, I forget what the word was that we were using, substantially similar or something. And to me, that seems to indicate that, they'd be seeking a uniformity amongst all of the plans, regardless of where the vessel is, regardless of the state waters. And I don't think that uniformity is constructive.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I could ask the question to Janet or something, but we don't have the same, I don't understand particularly the regulations, but we don't have the same response time for some tanker that cracks up 100 miles beyond Middleton Island that we do if it cracks up 100 feet from Valdez. I mean, I assume that the response time isn't the same. I mean, it can't be the same, of course, because we can't get to them. We have one that cracks up within our waters but out way outside of Prince William Sound versus one that goes in Valdez. We have different response times, different expectations, right?
I don't think that is correct. I believe that for a planning standard, we use a consistent time, and that's this much oil, and there is a difference between whether or not it's crude or non-crude, but it's this much oil.
You're going to have to use a microphone. We are listening to Ms. Adair from DEC respond to Representative Finkelstein's question.
Anyway, it's a certain amount of oil in a given time, and that's something that was established in House Bill 567, and it allows DEC to compare apples to apples. It's a comparison standard that we use. If you say you can do this much oil in this amount of time, then we know pretty much the parameters that you're working within. It's not a performance standard, and that was made very clear in the statutes, but as a planning standard, yes, we use the same time.
Yeah, I understand. I guess planning standards, and I'm sort of mixing up the terms when I'm talking about them all. Maybe I could try to ask Harry the same question, I just don't see anything. I've never heard anything about these compacts that says you're precluded from including different standards, because regardless of what the planning standards are, the performance standards or the performance expectations are different in various circumstances. We expect more depending upon the resources involved and the ability to respond. If something breaks up in the middle of the ocean, you can't respond the same way. We know we can't. These are just plain facts. Can I ask that question to Harry if he's
Yes, please go ahead. Harry, are you there?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman and Representative Finkelstein, you're absolutely correct. It's very important for people when they are reading through the compact not to confuse procedural uniformity with substantive uniformity. The goal of the interstate compact is to attain procedural uniformity, a single governmental entity for the compact zone, a single process by which planning is done. However, there is no mention throughout the compact language of substantive uniformity, and that's where your standards, sir, come in. So you are absolutely correct, sir. The goal of uniformity is one of process and a solitary regulatory entity, as opposed to 5, 6, 7 regulatory entities, each with their own distinct process.
glad he explained it that way. That was my point. Procedural uniformity isn't the same thing. Just because we have subsistence protection that fits subsistence resources in Alaska, and we get into a compact, doesn't mean that they're going to have subsistence protection that's going to occur on the beaches off of Los Angeles. Okay? There is, your argument is just totally contrived. That isn't the case at all. There's a big difference between procedure and substance, and you would be absolutely right. If it was a compact that had to treat every bit of the coastline the same, that'd be absurd. I could never support this, but this is an idea to get at something that's very complex, a long ways away. I understand, and I appreciate your answer to the previous question I had, that this is something that you oppose because you've invested a lot in meeting the existing standard, and any new standards make it tough for you. I mean, I think it's a totally reasonable position, and I appreciate your explaining it that way. But all the other arguments, we just don't know what's going to work out this way. This could be something that could help you. This is something uniformity of procedure could help you. I mean, you, like everyone else who copes with these laws, have to hire tons of people to cope with all these different standards and regimes and different levels of government. There is the possibility that this could help you. And while I think you're being conservative, from your point of view, is fine, I just hate all these arguments we get into about what's good policy, bad policy, and things. I don't think it helps things.
And I would like to point out for the committee, in your packet, there is a memorandum from the Legislative Affairs legal from Mr. John Godin, and it's dated March 2nd, 1990. And on that memo, you can see that Alaska is already a part of a large number of compacts, and they range from fisheries to radioactive waste management, etc. So compact is not something that is without precedent in our state. Are there other questions for Mr. Oxley? Thank you very much, Mr. Oxley, and appreciate your time and your comment. Next, I'd like to hear from Ms. Adair of the ADC.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, my name is Janice Adair. I'm with the Department of Environmental Conservation. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today about House Bill 135. The department is certainly fully supportive of cooperation between the Western states and the province of British Columbia regarding crude oil transportation and spill response. But we do have concerns and questions about the effect of the creation of the compact that's proposed under this legislation and the state's ability to regulate transportation of oil within our borders. House Bill 135 would establish a regulatory body composed of the members of the states of Washington, Oregon, California, Hawaii, and Alaska. Although the legislation states that British Columbia would be invited to join, we have received a copy and have shared it with you, a letter from the Deputy Minister for the Ministry of Environment for the province of British Columbia that states they would be unable to join a compact. The compact would be authorized under this legislation could enact regulations under the Federal Administrative Procedures Act, not under the state of Alaska, so the notice would be put in the Federal Register, not noticed in the state of Alaska in newspapers or public hearings or no requirement for that. And these regulations would govern the contingency planning process for certain size vessels, and with federal approval, financial responsibility for those vessels. There has been some conversation about what would happen at DEC. We presume that we would still be charged with doing contingency plan reviews for pipelines, terminals, and the vessels that are below the size limit that are subject to the compact's jurisdiction. So I think that you would still have people at DEC doing this function, and it would only be certain size vessels that would be taken out. You do also have within your packets a memorandum the Department of Law has written about the regulatory powers of the compact and some of the concerns or questions that the idea brings up for them. It is important to note, I think, that the compact's sphere of influence covers all navigable waters. That's not just the shoreline. That's our river system. That's the Yukon, Kuskokwim, the Koyuk, the Kobuk. And we don't know for sure what the impact of having a compact regulations on our river system would mean to the state. We also are concerned about the impact local citizens groups would be able to have on the compact regulation. During our development of the 567 regulations, there was no shortage of people who wanted to comment, people who wanted to have a public hearing, and it was made very clear to us that the coastal zone process review of contingency plans within the ACNP be a part of DEC's contingency plan regulations. Now, I don't know, and this is a question that we have, what the ACNP process would be if there would be one under regulations adopted by the compact. We don't think there would be, but we think it's a question that deserves looking into. As I said, we fully support the idea of cooperation coordination, and that is why we are active participants in the state's BC Task Force, and you should also have in your packets information about that. The task force was established in 1989, and the members are Washington, Oregon, California, Alaska, and British Columbia. The task force provides each member with a forum for coordination of oil-related activities. I've given a copy of the Memorandum of Cooperation to you in your packet so you can see what it covers. The task force as a whole meets annually, and it has subcommittees, four subcommittees, prevention, rules coordination, technology, and emergency response that meets quarterly, and you'll find information in your packets about those subcommittees as well. So while we do support the intent behind the compact, and clearly from 3 miles to 200 miles, a compact would serve Alaska well, we do have concerns and questions about the impacts of the 3 mile in, and particularly on our river system.
Janice, are you aware of what is the definitive position of the administration on the compact?
Mr. Chairman, the administration doesn't have a definitive position on the compact. What we have are questions. And what we'd like to be able to do is try to work through some of these questions and see what the answers are, if we can determine what they are.
Could you provide our committee then, before we hear this bill next, which will be sometime after the Easter break, with a list of those questions that concerns the administration as well as your department? Because then once we can focus on those questions, maybe we can make some progress in not only understanding the idea of the concept, but perhaps how Alaska could benefit from this compact. In addition, you indicated that local concerns here would probably not be met through such a compact. And that came somewhat as a surprise to me, because I know that there are many instances where, whether it's underground leaking storage tanks or other kinds of things, the local concerns have been less than priority. But I do think that it's a very legitimate point, and it's one that I would hope that we could together examine in more detail. Are there other questions by members of the committee or comments? Representative Finkelstein?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The previous witness from ARCO Transportation pointed out there's potential for having a compact that's just going to lead to another layer of government and additional burden, which I do believe is true. Do you think, just from your experiences, which is much greater than mine in this area, that there's also potential for reducing some overlap, reducing some of the burden, for reducing conflicting requirements over various jurisdictions? Do you think that potential is there? I'm not saying if you think it's going to happen, but do you think that potential is there as well?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Finkelstein, I think the potential is there. How real it is, I don't know. It's interesting in this issue. A concern that we have is the potential for a reduction of our standards as you try to coordinate these things, and people have said, and I believe it to be the case with some exceptions in California, that Alaska does have the strictest standards. As you try to reach a common denominator, I think it's a safe assumption that the common denominator will be somewhere between the lowest and the highest, which means ours will come down. There are other entities, other interest groups here, however, who are afraid that that will come up and it will be much, much stricter. And so you do see both spectrums of concern on this issue.
On that point, Ms. Sadir, you say that there are some who feel that between the strictest standard that we have here in Alaska, and I guess it depends on where you're looking at in the specific areas of the standards, it is your view or the department's view or the administration's view that there is a a likelihood that this compact would result in more strict regulation?
That is not our view, no. That is just a concern that we've heard expressed by other people interested or concerned with this legislation.
But you do not concur with that concern?
No. Mr. Chairman, our concern is that our standards would be reduced.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Finkelstein?
Mr. Chairman, I'd just say, too, while the administration has a lot of questions, I have a lot of questions, too. I mean, none of these things is easy for any of us to understand. I don't know a lot of places you are.
Other concerns or questions? Representative Lehman?
Mr. Chairman Jones, I'd just like to follow up on, you know, you acknowledge, I guess, that there's a potential for some savings, but the fiscal note that I see is for $557,000. That in itself concerns me, especially when we're, you know, right in the process of proposing reductions all across state government. Is it realistic to think that we could take or even get a net zero out of this, or $557,000 reduction in DEC, you know, instead of having duplication, another group of people, another set of people meeting and paying for transportation and paying for staff? Is that really realistic? My answer, I guess, if I can, well, maybe I should let you answer it and then tell you what I think.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lehman, my response to Representative Finkelstein was more in the terms of coordinated effort and the savings of effort. As we understand the compact, it would only deal with contingency plan and potentially financial responsibility for vessels over a certain size. So there is still going to be contingency plan and financial responsibility requirements within state law that DEC would be charged with implementing. So I don't think you could get a net zero. I don't know how many people, we don't have just individual people that just do vessels and then other people that just do onshore facilities. So it's hard to figure out exactly what the full-time equivalent effort is that is involved with vessel plans.
In other words, Representative Lehman, it's almost premature to be overly concerned about the fiscal note at this point.
Mr. Chairman, Lehman have the same fiscal note in front of that I do, too?
Well, I do now. And I don't know that it's ever premature to be concerned about fiscal notes, Mr. Chairman, but I'll probably always be concerned about them.
Very good. Thank you very much, Ms. Adair. Next, we'd like to hear from Mr. Dave Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I've passed out copies of a written, for the record, my name is Dave Parrish with Exxon. I've passed out copies of our written statement on this bill, and considering the time of the day, I'll very briefly summarize our position for the committee. We at Exxon see considerable merit in improving interstate coordination of certain activities, such as oil spill response planning, environmental monitoring, oil spill response, research and development, and regulatory oversight. Such activities support the need for an interstate advisory group for coordination rather than a compact with duplicative regulatory authority. An example of this that we think would be an effective mechanism to continue would be the state's British Columbia Task Force. We see several drawbacks to this legislation, particularly considering that recent comprehensive oil spill prevention and response legislation in Alaska, other coastal states, and at the federal level is currently being implemented through an extensive regulatory process. Development of any additional regulatory layer through the compact is unnecessary and potentially confusing. We foresee likely jurisdictional, constitutional, and regulatory conflicts associated with this proposed legislation. The bill contains broadly worded authority to regulate, often with no definition of what specific activities would be regulated. Compact would have inappropriate regulatory authority for an appointed body with potential duplication and conflict with existing federal and state roles, responsibilities, and powers. And finally, the compact would grant authority to an appointed body, which is generally delegated to elected legislative bodies. And so we see it as just yet another layer of regulation and hoops that you have to go through to operate in these activities. And in conclusion, we support the concept of an advisory group for coordination of information among the states mentioned here in the compact legislation. However, we think that this bill creates an unnecessary and duplicative regulatory body, and it is unnecessary in view of recent legislation passed here at the state level and at the federal level. Therefore, we are opposed to House Bill 135.
Mr. Parrish, is your company presently have any dealings with any kind of regional compact throughout the United States that you deal with?
Mr. Chairman, is that question related to oil transportation?
Anywhere within the structure of the Exxon Corporation, are you in any way affected by, advised by, or under the jurisdiction of such a regional compact amongst states?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of any in my work with the company, certainly none that would have the broad regulatory authority that would be embodied in this particular compact.
Mr. Parrish, that's one reason why it's good to have you at the table here. This is a preliminary step to assist the goal of uniformity. And it seems that, you know, before we even understand exactly what the compact would encompass, it would be more positive for industry to see what we could do to forge something that would not make it a duplicative act or another layer of compliance. I thought that we were making progress on this the last time we met in San Francisco on this very topic, and Captain Asplund, who was the, I understand, the captain of the ARCO fleet, had indicated that, you know, they were going to take a more favorable view. But it seems that we never get to first base. And I guess let me ask you this question. You spoke favorably for an advisory body. What, you know, if your company did not care to follow the advice of that advisory body, what authority would there be, what use would there be in getting these people together to merely say, would you please do something or another?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I interpret the role of an advisory body to be similar to the state's British Columbia Task Force in that it would be an advisory body to the state legislature in Alaska and the other states on these issues. So that's where I would see the usefulness of that.
Are there other questions of Mr. Parrish? No questions. Thank you very much, Dave. Finally, I'd like to hear from Mr. Bob Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Williams, and I'm an employee of Chevron, located in Anchorage. I'll make my remarks brief and do not have a written statement, although I'll be getting one to committee members soon.
Thank you.
Chevron supports the cooperative effort, as the other companies have stated, between the states. And, for example, the state's BC task force has issued a report that our company has used and reviewed. In fact, I'm aware that the Coast Guard and other people who have regulatory power continually look at those task force reports and use that as a basis for passing their regulations. Chevron's opposition to HB 135 is that it creates another body who has regulatory power. We already comply with C-plan regulations on the state level, and we comply with those C-plan regulations on the federal level. The benefits has been advertised to many people is that this would create a uniformity in those C-plan regulations. and that there wouldn't be any duplication. Well, the state of Alaska would still have to have a sea plan review organization to tend to all of the other oil facilities in the state. So there would not be a reduction of the state of Alaska's review of sea plans. In addition, I'm somewhat concerned that federal Congress created the citizen advisory committees, both in Prince William Sound and in the Cook Inlet. They currently have the review of sea plans as part of their task, I guess, for the federal Congress. And I'm assuming that this compact would take that away from them, and they would no longer be involved in that. I think this removes local input on sea plans for vessels operating in their area, and would be a great concern to the people in those two areas. I'm concerned that the discussion today has led around to the speculation that the sea plans would, of course, have to be different for each state, and it's only a procedure that we would gain from this. In effect, then, we would turn out with five separate sea plans, still filed in five separate areas, depending on what those individual states wanted for their coastline, and we would gain something through spending $500,000 for a procedural gain. And I'm not sure that we really have benefit for the amount of money that's being spent here. Let me make a comment about the state's right issue that's involved in here. Some of the advantages that have been touted for this compact is that it would bind these five areas together and would create regulations that those areas would have to follow, and that's been cited as an advantage. And then the people who support this legislation in the very next sentence turn around and say, well, there's no real worry, though, because you can get out of this thing in 6 months just by having your legislature agree to get out of it, or you always have your two votes in the compact that you can vote against any issue and not have anything occur. So I think the people who are envisioning this compact as something that could do something are playing both sides of the question. We can be in it for the good things, we can be out of it for the bad things, and every other entity that's involved in this is going to view it the same way. Again, we're talking about $500,000 for an organization that allows us to be in and out and accomplish, I don't believe, anything. Finally, let me talk about the partners in this arrangement, which I think is very important for the state of Alaska. The ocean resources in Alaska are very important because we have so many of them. The economies of California, Washington, and Oregon are greatly developed, and they have a different view toward their ocean resources than the people in Alaska do. If I were to pick a basket to get in with in the way of states, I would much rather be in with Wyoming and Oklahoma and Texas and perhaps some of the other states that were more positive for the development of their resources. I have some concerns in being with California, Oregon, and Washington. They have not been supportive of Alaskan issues in the past. I think the Coastal Plain is a fine example of that and the lack of their support for that effort, which is very important to Alaska. They have not been supportive in the North Fisheries activities that Alaska has holds the resource and essentially would like to use that resource to benefit Alaska. And so if I look at the partners that we intend to go into this compact with, I'm not so sure that's good for the long-term interest of Alaskans. I'll give you some written remarks and I'll be available for questions.
Thank you. Well, I guess we don't pick our ocean neighbors, but I appreciate your comments just the same. Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You did an interesting point I hadn't thought about the choice of neighbors. I hate to have some of the other ones you mentioned, Texas, and you didn't mention Louisiana, but Louisiana, you know, there's just, their attitude towards the chemical oil industries isn't probably what we'd want to have in our state. They've got terrible amounts of cancer and everything else going on there because of the industries that have been there. But it was an interesting point that I hadn't really thought of. So, Mr. Chairman, while I have the floor, too, I just wanted to apologize to Mr. Oxford before for being so argumentative. I hate it when other members are so argumentative, and I realized I was being argumentative. So my apologies. I shouldn't be arguing for it.
Is Harry Bader still online?
Yes, sir, I am.
Harry, would you address the issue of what is lost at the local and state levels as regards to input into how a compact would work and what, in fact, would be lost to those different levels as regards transport of hazardous materials or the issues that the compact would be dealing with?
Certainly, I'll try to do my best, sir. From what I understand of the concerns that have been brought up, for example, in local planning, the authority of the compact is limited to the compact zone. Therefore, there is no surrender of local authority that occurs outside of the compact zone. And that is very important because the compact zone, which is the area of authority for the compact, is defined specifically in Article 2 on page 5 to mean that portion of the ocean bordering the parties within the 200-mile exclusive economic zone. Therefore, the concern about a loss of local authority for the regulation of the Kobuk River, the Noatak, the Yukon, and the Kuskokwim is actually unfounded. The compact has no authority outside of the compact zone. So there is full 100% retention of local control, local concern, and local regulation of those interior resources that were earlier cited. Also, it's my understanding that the compact zone begins where state authority ends, and so it's thus an enhancement of state authority to project it. So that, to my extent, it actually increases local control and local concern for those areas that occur outside state territory but impact local resources. For example, Walt Parker's commission found that the greatest threat for a major spill would occur outside the territorial sea. For example, in transportation 20 miles offshore of a major vessel, 50 miles offshore, or 100 miles offshore. And yet the state and local entities have no avenue to directly regulate which corridors, which routes, and what precautions occur there, although these are the types of events that will most likely impact our local economies and environment. The compact would extend through the compact representative body local concerns being projected into an area that currently the state has no direct access for regulation. We are now involved with 50 parties to regulate anything from 3 miles to 200 miles. Whereas we will be one of 5 parties participating, and we'll have to have some kind of consensus with within our own representatives for any regulation that occurs. And it was this type of event occurring between 3 and 200 miles that the Parker Commission identified is the most likely to impact local authorities, local resources, of which currently local resources and authorities are completely powerless to influence. And finally, actually, Exxon has a lot of interaction with compacts. The New York Port Authority for the Harbor, the Bi-State Authority, is one of the most powerful interstate compacts going. So unless Exxon currently has no business or does not operate in New York City or the port for New York and New Jersey, they would have a lot of experience with very strong interstate compacts.
Thank you, Harry. Any other questions or comments toward any of our guests or Mr. Bader? Mr. Williams, thank you very much. Did you have any additional comments?
Well, I might comment on Mr. Bader's last statement that this now, we're looking at it from 3 miles out to 200, and that would lead me to believe then the state would still be regulating vessel contingency plans within the 3 mile area. So the duplication and the additional regulation that we've been talking about, in fact, is true. We would have to have a sea plan for outside of 3 miles with the Coast Guard, with the compact, and then yet another sea plan for those vessels within 3 miles. Companies such as mine, who operate fleets around the United States, it's going to add to our cost, and we think it's unnecessary for the benefit that will be obtained. That's why we oppose this legislation, which forms a regulatory body, as opposed to the advisory bodies that are currently working on these multi-state concerns.
Well, but what would be the savings to your company if the advisory body arrived at the same conclusions as this body with a little more authority? I mean, would you be doing what the respective legislatures will? Well, of course, they wouldn't, because they wouldn't have any authority out there. I have no other questions. Any other questions by members of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, if I could comment on the savings. In fact, the savings are significant in that if these advisory bodies pass the regulations onto the Coast Guard, when the Coast Guard passes regulations, they affect shipping around the United States. So you would have one consistent regulation, whether that vessel sails on the West Coast or to the East Coast. As a further example, I might say that if one of these states decides that it does not want to be in the compact, you're going to be subjected to another set of regulations as you pass through those waters outside of that state. So the complexities in regulation become more complex, the costs go up.
Well, I guess you're more of a generalist than I am, because I prefer to protect ourselves on a regional basis, because I don't think that the people in Texas and Louisiana, as well as other states bordering on the Gulf of Mexico, indeed, some of their problems are entirely different from what we have to experience on the West Coast, as well as the East Coast. So I would think that there are advantages from the perspective of the sovereign power making up these regional entities. There are advantages to such a regional entity as a compact. But, of course, operating in all of those theaters, I could understand why you would prefer to take your case to a federal agency that says, yes, that will all be the same everywhere. But I guess that's still the debate we must have, and I appreciate your time today.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I might also add that one of the concerns that Alaska and the West Coast should have is that if they were to create a regulatory environment that would discourage shipping, a vital link to Alaska and to those states would begin to be higher in cost, and would probably be difficult to attract the number of shippers, which would keep the competition and then the other things that we enjoy in the current system.
Well, that's a great leap from the intention of my statement, and I think that there would be not an effort to discourage, but an effort to encourage through uniform efforts to understand the problems that we have. Instead of sending a delegation to 5 or 6 or 7 different states, we would send it to a compact group, and they could deal with it. So, I mean, there are obviously advantages probably both ways from our respective perspectives. Thank you very much, and appreciate everybody coming to visit us today, and this meeting is adjourned.